In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams from The Main Edge in the house with us. Hello there, Mr. Adams.
Well, hello there. How are you?
Great, thank you. We were chatting in the break. It was opening weekend for Penobscot Theater's production of Escanaba in the Moonlight that you are a part of. It sounds like it went great.
Yeah, no, it was a really great turnout. The show came together really wonderfully. The audience response has been phenomenal. Like, people have really enjoyed it, which is nice because you're familiar with this phenomenon as well. But when you rehearse a show for a certain amount of time, any objectivity is gone. Like, you don't know if it's good anymore. Right. And so it's really nice to kind of get into that space where other people who don't have that sort of intimate connection with the material come in and see what you've done. And that's when it's like, oh, okay, this isn't terrible. We're actually doing well. People are laughing. People are having a good time. And and it was very much like that. And you know, the cast and crew have been phenomenal. We're having a hell of a good time. And we got two more weekends. So Wednesday through Sunday, this week and next, Escanaba in the Moonlight down there at the Bangor Opera House. And doesn't matter if you are a sophisticate or if you have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy, there will be something for you to enjoy.
Mostly Ranger Al.
up to camp, as it were.
Yeah, very cool. Looking forward to it. Well, let's talk movies. Somehow, in the midst of your crazy opening weekend, you saw three movies?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how that happened.
Wow.
Either. Yeah,
wow.
It was a very busy weekend. But the opportunity has finally arrived for those of us in this area to see some of the more prominently featured Oscar contenders. I leapt at the chance because honestly, I wasn't sure when I was going to have another opportunity.
Right.
So I did see one new release this week that we could briefly discuss, Winchester. Based on the real life Winchester Mystery House in San Jose, California. Sarah Winchester was the widow of William Winchester, the founder of the Winchester Repeating Arms Company, the gun guy. And she went a little loopy and and began doing this crazy constant renovation to her house, like building extra rooms and stuff, ostensibly to house the tormented souls of those whose lives were taken by her husband's invention.
Yee.
And so this movie is, air quote, inspired by true events.
Oh, good.
And so we've got Helen Mirren playing Sarah Winchester as the crazy woman living in the crazy house. Jason Clarke is the doctor recruited by the Winchester Repeating Arms Company to determine her state of mind and whether she can be removed from decision making in terms of the company. And, he's a skeptic who's also a laudanum addict, and he shows up and he's like, I don't believe that there are ghosts. There's no such thing. And Helen Mirren's like, but there are ghosts. And then it turns out there are ghosts.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that's really all you need to know. It was not a good movie. But, you know, I assume that Dame Helen got paid. And, you know, that's important.
Handsomely, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, and she's a delight anyway. Like, it's one of those things where, like, this movie is garbage, and she's still, like, there's no sense of phoning it in or anything. Like, she's legitimately, like, you know, I mean, she's not going 100%, but it's like, you know, she's treating the material with far more respect than it deserves. The shame is it's an interesting real life story that I think would have had a lot of potential to be a really good movie. And instead it's just a lazy kind of slap together collection of stupid haunted house tropes and jump scares and blah, blah, blah. I wanted it to be better, but it was not.
All right. But you did get to see some better fare.
I did, actually. It was a it was quite exciting when I saw that this opportunity was being presented. But yeah, I saw I, Tanya.
Oh, that looks so good.
And I saw The Shape of Water.
Wow, awesome.
Yeah. Saturday was a long day. We'll start with I, Tanya. Directed by Craig Gillespie, it's the story of, it's literally everyone over the age of 35 knows this, like still remembers the story of Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan, the 1994 Olympics, you know, the whack on the knee that heard round the world, and then the long and arduous journey towards something resembling the truth as to what exactly happened and who knew what when and all that. The sort of thing where it's like, it's kind of surprising it hasn't gotten the big screen treatment before now. I think there was a TV movie back in the day, maybe. But as far as like the legit, like, you know, prestige picture treatment, I'm kind of surprised it took this long. But it was worth the wait because... Craig Gillespie's done this wonderful thing where they've drawn the material from the real life interviews with the primary players. But the great part about it is like they basically break it down like perspective, like everyone's point of view gets represented. So you've got Tanya Harding's, she's played by Margot Robbie. You've got Jeff Galluli, played by Sebastian Stan. And then you've got Tanya Harding's mother, Lavanna, played by Allison Janney. And so you've got this sort of interview footage interspersed with the actual story as it's playing out. And the story changes depending on whose perspective it's being told from. And so it's woven together marvelously. Like it's just the shifts between perspectives are very smooth. You get the occasional fourth wall break, for one narrator breaking into another one's narration saying, I never did that. That never happened. This is what really went on, et cetera, et cetera. It takes her story from childhood all the way up through the Olympics and even a little bit beyond, like through the circus that kind of surrounded them as the investigation began and the plans made by the brilliant brain trust began to crumble around them. It's a story that I remember well. Like I was a senior in high school, I think, when all that was going on. And it's just one of those things where, you know, even today, like some 25 years later, it's still like a pop culture shorthand almost for like, you know, you could like Galluli someone like you say that and people know what you mean.
Exactly.
It's the sort of movie that it's a great story, but what really makes this movie are the performances. Margot Robbie's fantastic as Tanya Harding. Like she's really talented anyway, but I feel like she doesn't necessarily get the opportunity to shine as brightly as she might. And this is going to sound weird because of the way she looks. I mean, she's a stunningly beautiful woman. And so, that doesn't necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily get the respect, in terms of actual performance ability. And the chance for her to do something a little bit different, to stretch both in terms of performance and physically. Like she did, she trained a lot in order to be able to make the skating sequences work. Obviously, the really impressive physical stuff she's not doing, the triple axels and whatnot. But you know, she spent, you know, 6 months on skates 5 hours a day trying to get it so, you know, they could really do something realistic. So that was great. Allison Janney's been getting a lot of awards attention and deservedly so. She's so good in this movie, man. And I mean, it's Allison Janney, so she's, you know, obviously she's going to be good, but I mean, she's great. Like she's really, really great. And it's a very dark turn for her in ways that are really kind of unsettling. Like it's not easy to allow yourself to go fully like unlikable. And she does it, and it's just a marvelous piece of acting. But everyone involved is really good. Sebastian Stan is great as Galluli. There's a dude, I think Paul Fraser is his name, that plays Sean Eckard, the big fat dummo who was actually the bodyguard or yes. whatever, who is phenomenal. Like, I don't know that I've ever seen him in anything before, but he was just an absolutely marvelous fit. It was so much fun. And it was so ingeniously made, like this sort of marriage of reconstructed interview footage versus like the actual narrative playing out, the idea of like allowing these sorts of perspectives to bleed into each other. Like, it was just a really smart movie, and it really, really, I mean, just incredibly watchable.
Do you find yourself more sympathetic to Tonya Harding after seeing this?
Well, that's the great thing about it, is there's one of the great things that the filmmakers have done is they don't take a side. Like, they let everyone tell their story as they remember it. And memory is such a subjective thing. And so you've got like all these people being like, well, it wasn't my fault. Well, it wasn't my fault. You know, she did this and he did this and all that. And, you know, and she actually comes off as someone who's equal parts defiant and defensive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's the exactly the right note to strike, because I feel like that's basically where Tonya Harding's been living for the past two decades. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a wonderful movie filled with fantastic performances. And it deserves all the accolades that it's been getting.
All right. How about The Shape of Water?
Well, see, I'm like, I love me some Guillermo del Toro. Like, I think he's probably, in terms of just sheer crossover, like that sort of Spielbergian Venn diagram between like having an eye for the commercial and an eye for the artistic, I think he's probably the best one we've seen since Spielberg in finding the space between those two areas. Because, I mean, he goes back and forth from stuff like Hellboy and Pacific Rim to other stuff like Pan's Labyrinth and The Shape of Water, which is, at its core, it's a love story. And granted, it's a love story between a mute janitor and a giant fish man, but it's still a love story. It's set in Baltimore in the early 1960s, height of the Cold War. Eliza, played by Sally Hawkins, she's a mute woman who lives in an apartment above a movie theater, takes care of her artist neighbor, played by Richard Jenkins, who's phenomenal because, you know, he's Richard Jenkins and he's always phenomenal. And she works at this sort of vaguely defined facility, sort of a government spot filled with scientists and defensive contractors and military guys and stuff like that. But, you know, she basically just, she mops up. She and her sort of work partner, Zelda, played by Octavia Spencer, who, again, also phenomenal because she's always awesome. And, and that's basically her life. But it all gets flipped upside down when a new asset, they call them assets, is brought in by this military colonel named Strickland, played by Michael Shannon, who... phenomenal, et cetera, phenomenal, et cetera. And it turns out to be this sort of amphibious humanoid creature that they pulled out of the Amazon, and they want to study it because they feel like, because of the way, the unique way it breathes, it's an amphibious creature, they feel like they might be able to glean some sort of technical advantage, a knowledge advantage over the Soviets because they're in the midst of the space race. And so that's the plan. They're going to study this thing and try to figure out what makes it tick. But due to circumstances, Eliza starts finding ways to connect with this creature. And again, she doesn't speak, it doesn't speak, but they find ways to communicate with one another. And you know, as that relationship grows, things become more and more tense. You know, Strickland's superiors want results now, so they decide, you know what, let's just cut this thing open. And that's when the plan to rescue this creature goes into effect, with allies both expected and non. Ooh. Yeah, I'm not going to go any further than that because I don't want to spoil too much, but yeah, it's a modern fairy tale, a fable. You know what I mean? Like, it's the... And, you know, I refer to Del Toro as a fabulist a lot of times. And I think that's a fairly apt description of him. Even in the more commercially driven stuff, like you still see that sense of the joy of the fable. You also see a kid who grew up like with the covers over his head watching monster movies, you know. And the wonderful thing about it is he's bringing that love of that sort of, you know, 50s drive-in fare or whatever, late night, you know, creature feature idea, and he's elevating it in such a marvelous way. It's just so wonderful to see, because he's such a visual stylist. Like, he just, it's like every frame is just beautiful to look at. And when you combine that with a compelling narrative and you know, wonderful effects work and a really kind of touching story, like, what you get is, well, I mean, what you get is a movie that gets nominated for 13 Academy Awards.
Well, there's the lowdown right there. Alan Adams of The Main Edge, 3 for your perusal and your consideration here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you very much.
Go home and rest, will you?
I'm gonna see about that.
Kick your feet up. No, you can't do that.
No.
It's too busy.
I got stuff to do.
It's Alan Adams. We'll see you on Wednesday.
Yeah, you will.
Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family.